Welcome to the Officer Media Group Roll Call Podcast. Officer Roll Call is meant to inform and entertain. Now, let's get into this episode.
Welcome to the lineup, Officer Magazine's roundup of this week's police and law enforcement news. I'm your host, Joe Vince, assistant editor for Officer Magazine. And with me today, pinch hitting for a late scratch, Lieutenant Frank Borelli, is Officer Magazine editor Paul Peluso.
Hey, thanks for having me, Joe. This is it's always good to join you on this.
Thank you very much for stepping in. Frank, unfortunately, couldn't make it for this episode's recording, but Paul is here. Paul, in case you haven't, you're a new listener, Paul, editor of Officer Magazine. He's filled in before, and love having you. We're going to get started right away. Got a packed show, as always. We start with our first story out of North Carolina, and it's just a devastatingly tragic week for law enforcement. Four North Carolina law enforcement officers lost their lives while trying to serve an arrest warrant. They were members of a U.S. Marshals Fugitive Task Force that was headed to a home in Charlotte. As they arrived, the suspect inside the home began firing. Along with the four officers who were killed, four other officers were also wounded. I'd like to name the officers as well who lost their lives. It was Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Officer Joshua Iyer, Samuel Peloshi, William Elliott, both members of the North Carolina Department of Adult Correction, and U.S. Marshal Thomas Weeks. According to reports, the suspect inside the home had a rifle and moved from different spots in order to create confusion. At one point, officials thought there were possibly two shooters. But another example of officers going out, doing their jobs, serving a warrant, and I don't necessarily know if it hasn't been termed as an ambush, but the first thing that they meet is a gunfire.
Yeah, and you know, just the way that even like the neighbors described the scene here and what went on, like just the amount as the whole scene built there, and then the amount of officers that had to, you know, be on the scene, and the amount of gunfire eventually. Like you said, it's definitely tragic, and some of these incidents, not quite this scale, but it's, you know, we're seeing more officer line of duty deaths lately. So this was definitely tragic this week.
It's been a brutal spring, and not just with a line of duty deaths, but also shootings of this nature, where officers are going out on calls, and in some cases where offenders are intentionally luring officers into spots where they can ambush them. There was a case too where the suspect fired at least 100 rounds. I think over 100 rounds. And the shootout that entailed, the suspect was finally fatally shot in this incident. But it goes to show too, when you see the bystander and witness reports of what was going on, there was just a dramatic video from a resident who was locked out of his home and was outside as officers are using his car for cover in the shootout. This individual is recording it, trying to get in, knocking on the door, telling his son to open up, and his son can't hear him. Other neighbors were saying how it sounded like a war zone. You know, and they were maybe two streets over. I can't imagine what that was like. Here you are in this neighborhood, and suddenly it just explodes into gunfire. on top of just this large police presence that is popping up, you know, all focused on this one home. And if you're, you know, like this, unfortunately, like this one individual, you know, stuck outside of your home while this is happening, it's got to be incredibly frightening.
Yeah, I think they estimated what about at least 150 officers and snipers perched on neighbors' homes. It's quite a scene, and, you know, like we said, very tragic.
And one of the things I wanted to point out too is, you know, we talk about obviously the officers and the law enforcement that is involved in these types of incidents. But one of the things I want to point out is the other first responders and the other people who are affected by these types of cases. In particular, trauma surgeons at the hospital, one of the officers, wounded officers, was taken to, you know, worked on one of the officers saving his life. These people are, you know, should be heralded as well. For what they're, the ER doctors, the surgeons who are having to work under, you know, just incredible pressure to save these lives after a shootout like this, you know, kudos to them. It just it's, you know, I think, you know, some of that spotlight has to be put on the doctors and I'm sure the medics. I just recently did a story on tactical medics and, you know, what the training that they go through and sort of the mindset that they have in situations like this, in order to, save the lives of, you know, the officers involved and in some cases trying to keep them in the fight. So I'm glad that these surgeons were able to save an officer's life, you know, and that he wasn't, this officer didn't become one of the one of those officers who unfortunately lost his life. So just a great job by them. And another thing I kind of want to point out too was a story that we ran on Thursday printed the obituary that the 12-year-old son of one of the slain officers wrote, and it's incredibly heartbreaking. You know, he calls him, let's see here, he was the best man I will ever know, and I hope to be just like him. I will learn how to ride. You know, for my 12th birthday, he bought me a dirt bike. He bought himself one too so that we could ride together. I will learn how to ride it, and we will ride together one day, Daddy. It just rips your heart out to hear that, and it just shows the ramifications, the ripple effects that these tragedies have in the lives of so many other people who weren't even at the scene.
Yeah, the obituary written by his son was, definitely tugged at the heartstrings. Everything you wrote about him, like this story. So it was just 16 lines long, but just kind of recounted everything about his father and everything that they did together and their hobbies. And, you know, we do think about it, but it's, you know, kind of lost on us sometimes is when these officers died. A lot of times they're young and they have younger kids.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who they leave behind. So with Police Week coming up here soon, you know, it's just something to think about that all these surviving families that they, you know, they all still have to grieve.
Moving on to our next story. This is out of Florida. Really scary situation that happened earlier this month, last month in April. Security video, camera video was released this week, and it involves a Lee County Sheriff's deputy who was at his home at the time when an individual decided to start ramming his garage and then open fire while he and his son were still inside their home. What ended up happening is the deputy grabbed his firearm and was able to apprehend and detain this suspect while other deputies were able to arrive at the scene. This is a Lee County deputy, and this happened at his home in Port LaBelle, Florida. And video from a neighbor's security camera shows this suspect, just this man, driving into the garage repeatedly with his SUV and then opening, you know, firing shots. Luckily, no one was injured. Officials believe that this deputy was targeted simply because he had his cruiser parked out in front of his home, and that this individual who lived in the neighborhood took that for some reason as a as the impetus for this attack while the deputy was at home. It was unclear whether or not the man knew that the deputy was there, that anyone was there, or if this was just an attempt at simply vandalism, doing it while the individual wasn't home. But what a frightening thing to happen, especially when you have your son there as well.
Yeah, I mean, the composure definitely that this deputy showed, and it happened in broad daylight. It was 11:30 a.m. on a Sunday, in middle of April there. And yeah, that's, you know, you more expect something like this to maybe happen at night, but in the afternoon or late morning, I guess, something like this to happen in his home. That's, this is something that deputy definitely, training kicked in, but things can happen at any time. And it really stinks that he was targeted at home like that.
I know that is always a back of the mind concern of someone in law enforcement. I know, with my father, that was always a worry something somehow the job would splash into his personal life in ways that he wasn't able to control. Certainly not something that he was overly concerned about, but it's something that that crosses your mind. And this individual, along with the house, targeted the cruiser, slashed the tires, damaged the windshield, just was on a wrecking spree. And again, thankfully, no one was injured, and the individual was taken into custody.
Let's see. Hopefully, there's so many positives when it comes to having take-home cruiser, our take-home cruisers, crime deterrent,
right?
Just seeing that there's an officer there, so hopefully this doesn't give the agency second thoughts with the take home cruisers, but it's just very unfortunate. So luckily it wasn't a negative outcome there.
Yeah, that's a great point. Moving on to our next story, let's see, this is actually a national story. So a survey was just released showing that hiring has been up in 2023, police hiring, for the first time since before the pandemic. This is great news. I mean, if you've listened to this podcast before, I've been a broken record about sounding like a broken record when it comes to the struggles that departments and other law enforcement, police departments and other law enforcement agencies are having when it comes to recruiting retaining officers. This is just a great sign that nationally things are improving. Let me see, grab a few of the numbers here. Let's see, last year's increase was the first since the 2020 death of George Floyd. And since then, departments now are starting to see, I don't know if this is simply just if this is a trend or if this is just an isolated increase. Hopefully, departments are going to be able to build on this. I know in with some of the agencies that I've been talking about and some of the stories that I've been seeing, you're seeing these small gains where I believe, you know, you're seeing academy classes that are larger. You're definitely seeing departments that are trying to find different ways to recruit, looking at sort of a different crop of candidate when it comes to, you know, who they're making officers. So this is all good news.
Yeah, and I think that part of it's just, you know, agencies dealing with the new normal now when it comes to hiring, but also, you know, there was a slight increase in that there was such a decrease from, like, here it has 2020 and 2023, their police staffing shrunk by nearly 6%. And this is all from the Police Executive Research Forum, which always does a really good job with these studies and surveys. So, you know, there was a slight uptick, and hopefully that continues. And I think, you know, all the agencies out there are really dealing with short staffing. I was at a conference last week, and, you know, oftentimes they would ask the audience made up of officers, like, who's understaffed? And just about everybody's hand would go up.
Yeah.
And they would ask, like, who's at staffing? And you'd have like one or two hands go up. So it's definitely the norm still to be understaffed. And hopefully this is a trend that continues.
You know, you said a phrase I haven't heard in a while, the new normal. It got me nostalgic. Moving on to our next story. This is out of Minneapolis, where two Minneapolis officers have received that department's Medal of Valor for an incredible frozen pond rescue that happened late last year. Minneapolis Police Sergeant Jeremy Despies and Officer Ashley Bergenson responded to a call about a child who had fallen through the ice on a pond. This was in November of last year, and body camera footage that was released from this rescue shows just not only the speed of their response, but you can see their training kicking in as they're in really cold weather, taking off what extraneous gear and equipment they can, and plunging into the water in order not only to pull this young boy out of the pond, but then also to start performing CPR on land. And they were able to save his life. They're receiving the department's Medal of Valor for this. Watching this video, you know, you see how quickly they work. And you also really see just how you realize that they need to work this quickly. You know, seeing an unresponsive child like this and knowing the clock is ticking, if not only ticking, but you've already probably behind, you know, the time you need because the person was already in the water and you have all of that delay. Just a great job by them. I'm glad to see that they're being recognized.
Yeah, it was some of the extra things in here in the interview that they talked about, you know, the deputies said that they weren't necessarily trained for this type of water rescue, but they were able to improvise in the moment. And luckily it was a good outcome. And that one of the deputies kind of remembered, you know, responding to a tragic situation a few years ago where a stray bullet struck a 9-year-old, and that 9-year-old didn't survive the incident, and how, you know, the whole time they were praying for a better outcome. This child did suffer a brain injury and caused some hearing loss and is still recovering, but that ultimately they were able to save his life. So,
and you know, that I'm glad you brought that up about the officer, you know, a previous incident where the individual didn't survive, and you know, just the weight, it sounded that was with her, you know, despite her best efforts, not being able to save a life. And in this case too, the same situation, if this had gone, in a tragic direction, you know, even though you're doing everything you can, you know, it still might not have that result you want. It's still got to have, you know, it's still, I'm sure, something that obviously, you know, they keep with them and they carry with them. And, you know, I feel for, you know, these officers too, that I'm glad they got this win, because I'm sure a lot of times it can feel like they're, you know, there's just a lot of marks in the L column, so to speak. So again, congratulations to them on their medal, and definitely for the work they've done. Let's see, moving on to our next story. This is out of New Jersey, and another dramatic rescue. Two New Jersey Transit police officers saved the life of a choking child who was coming from a bus from Texas, arriving in Trenton, unresponsive. The father takes him off the bus, holding him, and these two officers quickly start performing life saving techniques on him, CPR, trying to get him breathing again. Finally, they decide to take him to the hospital immediately, while one officer is driving. The other officer is still performing CPR in the car. Finally, as they're coming up to the hospital, they start to get signs of life. The child's voice breathing again, and they were able to, pass him off then to ER doctors there. All of this was captured by the officer's body camera. And again, you see that, you know, all of the energy, and just, boy, that car ride, it's just, you can just kind of feel the, I don't know if hope is the right word, but whatever that emotion that the officer is performing the CPR is trying to pass on, just to get this child to breathe again. You know, great job by the two of them.
Well, yeah, and you usually see, you know, the choking child stories when they're much younger. Yes. You know, like the weeks, months old, but this is a 3-year-old. So when a 3-year-old's choking, it's usually very serious, and it's surprising how long, you know, that it took, but they were able to finally get him, get positive signs there, and he was able to recover. So that's, yeah, this is quite a dramatic case here, but luckily they were able to make it work.
Yeah. And this too, just the, here you have, it was unclear the story if they were alerted ahead of time before the bus got there, if, you know, if they were able to be ready to know that this father was going to be getting off, if they knew the specifics of war or what details they might have had. But to be at a, you know, to be at the station and just suddenly this father has this limp child that, you know, say he can't breathe, you know, and having to assess that situation and what, the course of action, is needed is, you know, that's half the battle right there. Let's see. And moving on to our final story, this is out of Indiana, and actually, not only is this is from South Bend, where I used to work there many, many years ago. And not only did I work there, I was working there and living there at the time that I guess you could say this story started. In 2000, South Bend Police Lieutenant Gene Eister responded to a call about an abandoned baby who was left in blankets in a cardboard box in the common hall of an apartment complex. He recovered the child, you know, and brought the child to the hospital. directly after he had left a teddy bear in the hallway as a reminder to people that, hey, you know what? The child was taken care of. It's okay. It's just a sign. It was something that really had stayed with the officer, but records of this child were sealed. The officer, I think, resigned himself to the fact that he wasn't really going to know much more after this. It just, that was how the system worked. The child ended up being adopted, you know, and having a life. It jumped, you know, 24 years later, Lieutenant Eister is now a retired police officer. And he receives a call from, you know, current South Bend police officer who asks him if he remembers, you know, that abandoned baby that he had found. And of course, Officer Eister did. And this other officer says, well, guess what? He's sitting right next to me. And not only that, he is a rookie with the South Bend Police Department, the same department that, you know, Gene Eister had been a member of. They were able to reunite. It is such a touching story. And then the cherry on all of it is that when Eister had received this call, it was soon after his own son had suddenly passed away. If there was a time he needed a reunion and kind of just an affirmation of the good things in life, this is definitely it. It's just a great story. And like I was telling Paul before we started recording, you know, I didn't cry at Brian's song, but, you know, I mean, even right now, this has got me choked up a little bit. I don't recall the initial stories when this, and I should, let me mention the rookie's name too. Matthew Hedges Stewart. I don't remember the initial stories about that in 2000. I had just moved to the area at about that time. But it is so great to hear, and here you see just the impact that you know, law enforcement officers have on the lives of even the people who weren't even old enough to really register that. But this, here was this boy, now a man, where this still, he wanted to meet the officer who rescued him, that it was still important to him. It was something that he had sought out. So I'm really glad that they were able to find each other.
Yeah, like you said, Gene Eister, he, you know, his son was 36 years old and had died just recently before this. And so he was quoted as saying, so the timing couldn't have been any better. It helped fill the void that I've had to deal with. So that's, you know, it just adds to this story. And yeah, just the fact, these are the types of stories that need to be out there and be shared. Mm-hmm. That, you know, show people like the power of officers and what can happen sometime. And just, you know, the story of this rookie police officer that, you know, was abandoned and adopted, and years later, just that power of the police force, and he's now officer at the same department. So truly a touching story.
You got to think too that there is a possibly a sense of that, you know, paying it forward, that Matthew felt, you know, of just in his life of wanting to keep doing that, that might have lent itself to you know, pushing him into law enforcement. You know, and the other thing too is for Officer Eister at the time to leave a teddy bear in the hallway to connect with the community to say, hey, you know what, you know, you're not alone. There are people who are caring for those who have been abandoned, who have been left behind. I just thought was great Just as a great message, certainly an individual who understood his neighborhood, his community, which now is being patrolled by the young boy he had saved. That wraps things up for us this week. Thank you, as always, for tuning in and listening. I guess you don't tune in on a podcast, but you know what? I'm old. I still tune in and I turn the channel. So, Paul, thank you very much for filling in for Frank this week. Again, as always, it's been great.
Hey, thanks for having me. This is great as always.
And again, hope you listen to some of our other podcasts. You can find them on Podbean. And I look forward to having you guys back next week. Take care and stay safe.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Lineup. Please remember, the opinions voiced are not those of Officer Media Group or Endeavor Business Media, but only those speaking those opinions themselves. Thank you and stay safe.